You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my baby, man. Anything's possible.
Rain of Jay's back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly.
Welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast. I'm John Corrales. I'm your host. I cover the team for MassLive.com. You can follow me on Twitter at RedsArmy_John. Practice on Tuesday, the first one of the season. Double sessions. They went through a practice at the beginning. Then they watched some film afterwards. And they went through whatever else. They went through 2 days leading up to a game on Sunday. I was there. And today I'm going to talk about Kemba Walker and Jason Tatum. Kemba had just a comment about getting together with Brad, getting that point guard coach relationship. I wrote about that on MassLive.com. Also wrote a column about Jason Tatum. I'll talk about that in the second segment, about how this season is kind of a way for the Celtics to, I don't want to say rewrite their history, but kind of paint how this era in Celtics history will be perceived. Like Jason Tatum's season this year will paint how this era can be perceived. I will explain that in the second segment. And in segment three, your voicemails, I will get to those. I will play them. I will answer them, react to them. That's segment three. Let's start with Kemba, who had his first media availability after a practice, and he got to see how things were going, play with his teammates, more of the teammates than he did in China. I'm going to play you a little bit of sound. It might be hard to understand. I'll play it, and then I'll kind of read the quote afterwards so you get a sense of what he was saying. But this is him talking about building a relationship with Brad Stevens.
That's really important. I've always felt that as a point guard, you know, I should have a great show with my head coach. Yeah, me and Brad, we've been talking a lot, and we will. We'll continue to grow, you know, with one another. That stuff just takes time. You know, it takes a lot of time, so I'm looking forward to, you know, the growth between them.
A lot of basketballs dribbling in the background, so what he said was, it's really important to me. I've always felt that as a point guard, I should have a relationship with my head coach. So me and Brad, we've been talking a lot. We have some things to grow with one another. That stuff just takes time, a lot of time. I'm looking forward to the growth between me and him. And he later said that he and Brad have a lot of respect for one another. Brad's a great coach and that great teacher. So it really kind of highlights the dynamic between Kemba and Brad. And I think that those two are going to get along fine. The reason it becomes somewhat notable is obviously because of Kyrie Irving. And there's going to be a shadow of Kyrie Irving, at least over the beginning part of this whole thing. And I don't know how long it's going to last, but it's kind of unavoidable when Kyrie Irving was the star point guard. And Kyrie Irving had some kind of public ways he disagreed with Brad Stevens. And some of the things that he said and did and the way he acted, it kind of highlighted how tough it might be to coach a player like him. And to have Kemba come in and kind of seem like, yeah, it's going to be a little bit easier. He's going to work a little bit differently with Brad. And when Brad Stevens talks about the togetherness of this team, this is kind of the thing, part of the thing that he was talking about. That relationship between a coach and a point guard, super important, might be the most important dynamic in basketball, because it's the point guard who's initiating the offense most of the time. It's, you know, they had Al Horford. They have other guys. Jason Tatum, Gordon Hayward will also be initiating offense. But it's the point guard, obviously. He's that, as they say, the cliche goes, the floor general. So that relationship between those two has to be cohesive. Whether it's a star point guard, whether it's a kind of just run the team point guard, that relationship needs to be, it needs to work both ways, because the coach needs to trust the point guard on the floor because he's the player. He sees the game. He feels the game. He's the one out there that can understand what he's seeing in front of him, directly in front of him. And it's hard to get that view from the sideline. At the same time, the coach has a feel for the game, this overall feel for the game. He's got a coaching staff. As a point guard is out there defending or doing whatever and caught up in that moment, coaches are talking about things, seeing things. Maybe while Kemba, whomever it is on one side of the floor, they see something that's coming up. They see something that's being done on the other side that might not be aware to everybody. So getting that relationship with your point guard and having the trust in both sides to say, all right, coach wants me to run this play, run this thing, because if he's in a timeout, he can say, look, we've got this matchup. This is happening. So run this. Or Brad can just call over to Kemba, call out a play or something and say, let's go, run this, work it, such and such play for Jalen or whatever. That type of thing needs to be, there needs to be a trust, because Kemba is going to say, all right, well, he's calling this play, let's run it and see, you know, what's going on. Or maybe Kemba kind of sort of sees something and he realizes in the moment, oh yeah, that's good. That's a good idea. And then afterwards, there's the film session. It doesn't just manifest itself on the floor. There's a film session where those guys get together and say, okay, this is why I wanted to do this. Or Kemba can call out, and this is another thing where trust comes in. Kemba can call out in a film session and say, what if we did this? Or, you know, I saw this, or next time I'd like to try this. And it depends on how you say these things. And this applies to everything. When I was working in a TV station or something, like, you could come out and be a jerk about it and be like, next time it's this way, and you slam your fist. Or you can say it nicely and figure out a way to kind of include everybody, or just express a concern. People respect that. Be like, you know what? Next time I'd like to do blah, 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 because I saw this. I think this will work. I'd like to try it. And if you believe in yourself, then you say, I want to try it, and hopefully it works out. And when it works out, or if the coach says, no, I'd like you to try this, and you do it and it works or it doesn't work, then that trial and error, that trust to do those things really helps things run. And now when we're talking about running an offense with a new point guard, this is the third point guard in 4 years for the Celtics starting point guard. So Marcus Smart is the guy who's seen them all. And luckily, in some sense, I guess, the turnover has been such that it's not really going to impact the whole team. But it's still Brad's, another point guard for Brad to get used to. The turnover has been fairly quick for these point guards. And now that they've got Kemba in here for the next few years at least, maybe there could be a little bit more continuity. But to hear how Kemba talks and to see how he acts and just to kind of see how these guys interact with each other so far early on, it's encouraging. Again, things are framed in a certain way because of how last year went. And like I said in yesterday's show, there's a reason why everybody's talking about wanting a fresh start. But moving forward, the hope is that this cohesiveness can start to build. So read my piece on Kemba. It's on masslive.com. So you get a little bit more of that dynamic in what I wrote and some of the quotes there. When we come back, we'll talk about Jason Tatum. And you'll hear Brad Stevens talk a little bit about Jason Tatum, and why I think this is a pivotal year for Tatum and the Celtics. More Locked On Celtics coming right up after this break.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
In yesterday's podcast, I shared a little bit from Jason Tatum about his kind of what he was working on, the offense, attacking more, taking more threes, all of that stuff, which is exciting from a Celtics fan's perspective. Like, that's exactly what you want him to do. In practice on Tuesday, Brad Stevens was asked about the offense and Jason Tatum, and here's what he had to say.
Well, at times we were really good offensively last year, and you know, we were much better offensively statistically than the year before. And so I think that our goal is to continue to make the right strides and make the right steps. Everybody benefits from good ball movement and precise ball movement and high motor offense, because when you catch it, you have a little bit more of a step on your defender. You know, and you don't have to work quite as hard in an isolated moment. So I think we all benefit from that. Jason was very good today, just like I expected. You know, he's, I thought he came off of a strong couple of games before he got hurt, and then he was in here last week, and you could tell that he's ready to go.
I'm getting an immediate impression from Brad Stevens that he feels like he was right. And I think I should talk to him about this. I feel like he's thinking, I was right about basketball. I know what I'm talking about when it comes to basketball, and I should just do what I know when it comes to basketball, because the ball movement, all of that stuff that he's talking about. And when you think about yesterday at, or Monday at Media Day, where Brad Stevens, well, I asked Brad Stevens about lessons from last year, and he said, the quote is, I just think all that I've always thought and believed about the game has just been reinforced. That's telling, because in this quote from practice, he basically says that, look, everyone benefits from good ball movement, precise ball movement, high motor offense. That's everything he's always believed about basketball. And last season was about standing around, stagnating, iso ball. Too many guys were isolating. And he says flat out in that quote that I just played, you don't have to work quite as hard in an isolated moment. You catch the ball on the move, you've already got a step on your defender. And that's 1,000,000% true, that you move the ball, you move yourself, you cut, and the ball will ultimately find the right energy. How many times have I said that thing on this podcast? Pass, move, cut. Eventually somebody will get open, and eventually the ball will find the person who gets open. And we know that Tatum and Kemba, Jalen, Gordon, all of those guys are going to be scorers. They'll become relied upon for a lot of the scoring. We know that. Tatum especially. Move, cut. Eventually you'll get the ball. Catch the ball on the move, then you can stop and change directions, which Kemba does extraordinarily well. You're on the move, you stop, you change directions, your defender is going that same other direction, and now you have a lane. And that's where Tatum develops. That's where Tatum becomes that guy. There are questions about whether Tatum can become that guy. Like, we think it's possible. I mean, it certainly is possible, depending on who you talk to around the league, fans, players, coaches. There are different opinions. But Tatum has an opportunity this year to become a next level player. Okay? Like, he has that chance in him, but he has to adjust how he plays. So yesterday he said those things about attacking and taking more threes, and that has to be the case. He can't be bullshitting about that. He has to actually believe it and do it. And Brad Stevens today saying in practice that this is how he's going to have to do it more often than not. Tatum has to believe that. He can't just catch and stop and stare at a defender and then make his move. I mean, that happens from time to time, obviously, but that can't be the norm. You can't give up an advantage. You can't come off a screen. You can't come off a cut. You can't start and do like those flex cut or floppies or whatever, where the guy starts on the baseline, comes out to the wing, catches the ball, and then turns and stares. Like, you can't do that. You got to catch the ball on the move, keep on moving, then use that advantage. If Tatum can do that, then he has an opportunity to kind of rewrite, or not even rewrite, paint this era in Celtics history in a positive light. Like, a lot of things have happened over the past few years. And when we look at the history of this team, how it's perceived will very likely hinge on what Jason Tatum does this season. And I don't know if you think that's unfair or what, but that's the reality to me. That if Tatum takes a leap, he doesn't have to become a megastar. Maybe he doesn't become a top five player. Okay, maybe he never becomes a top five player. He doesn't have to. Even if he eventually does, he doesn't have to. But what he does have to do is take a leap and show that he can be a number one guy. Maybe he's not the number one guy this year, but he has to become the number one guy in the next year or two for the Celtics to feel good about how everything went down. Think about it. Danny Ainge pulled the trigger on that Nets trade. And for all of the different things that they got, and you turn around and you flip this for that and that for this, and Isaiah Thomas comes and Isaiah Thomas goes, and you get Kyrie Irving. Well, a lot of that has started to fall apart. Okay, there was a point where the return was amazing, and you flipped all these players to get these great players, and eventually the plan was some of it got you Kyrie, and some of it will get you Anthony Davis, and now Kyrie and Anthony Davis and Al Horford, man, I mean, that is a contender. That's the big payoff. However, concurrently, as we've talked about multiple times throughout the years, there was that plan B that was already in place. It was embedded in plan A, that if certain things don't work out, you still got Tatum, you still got Jaylen Brown. Well, I right now, on this October 2nd, I'm not high on Jaylen Brown becoming like a 1A type of player or a number two type of player. I'm high on Jaylen Brown becoming a high-end role player, which may sound negative to people, but a high-end role, like, you need high-end role players. High-end role players, I mean, we're talking about the $15 to $20 million a year guys in today's NBA. Like, those guys, not the $35, $40 million guys. We're talking not mid-level guys either. In between that, the people between the mid-level and the stars, like, those high-level role players are really, really, really good players, okay? They're just not superstars. There's nothing wrong with that. So I think that's what Jaylen Brown can be, which means Jason Tatum has to become the superstar. And I think Jason Tatum has that vision. He sees things that I don't know that Jaylen Brown sees. So I could be wrong, and maybe that develops, but right now that's where I stand. If Tatum becomes the superstar, if Tatum becomes the number one option, if he becomes a guy that is pretty clearly a number one option kind of guy, then the Brooklyn Nets trade becomes a more positive thing. Like, right now you hear the rumblings from some people like, yeah, okay, he fleeced Brooklyn, but what did he do with those pieces? What did he get? ultimately, this could be fizzling out unless Tatum takes that leap, in which case that trade netted you Jason Tatum. And you get to stick it to the Nets and the 76ers because you got that pick. And then you flip that 14th, that pick for 14. If Romeo Langford pans out, then you have extra bragging rights. But that's a different discussion. In addition to that, if Jason Tatum pans out, then losing Kyrie Irving, losing Al Horford, missing out on Anthony Davis, you're okay. That minimizes the loss there, where people say, why didn't you just go get Anthony Davis and just figure it out? And I was thinking that way. But if Tatum does pan out, then that kind of goes away too. Because that plan B, you're like, well, Danny Ainge was right to say, you know what, I believe in this plan B. There's a reason why we did it this way. Yeah, that sucked. The plan A didn't work, but this plan B is going to be pretty good. And it would be better than most teams' plan A. So Ainge would get to say that. And if, in addition to that, kind of along with that, if Tatum pans out, then there's no further rebuild. That Tatum plus Kemba, and then you find that third player. Whether it is Jaylen Brown taking that leap, something that I didn't see coming, or some sort of trade, or the Memphis pick becomes a player that really pans out and can become your number three option. However that works out, you have that path with Tatum as your star versus, well, Tatum didn't pan out and he's going to be the high-end role player versus the star, which means, well, what do you do with that? You got two high-end role players and no star. That's no good. He's going to strip it down again and rebuild again. Figure out a way, which means another year, two, three, four in the pursuit of a championship. How much longer does that take? Then we start talking about things like championship droughts. That's not something that the Celtics want. So this season from Tatum, when you look back at it, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, this is a turning point. It's a pivotal thing because a great season from Tatum, the belief that he has gone out and earned that max contract because he is going to be, without a doubt, your number one option. That type of season from him changes how people look at all of these other things that have happened over the past 5 years or so. Like the you know how they say, what's the phrase? Victors write history or something like that. The winners write the history books or some shit like that. Like that's kind of how it goes. Like if Danny Ainge wins with Tatum being awesome, then he gets to write the history book and everything seems to work out in his favor. So with that, I will take a break. I wrote a column about that a lot more succinctly than I talked about it, but it's on masslive.com/Celtics. Bookmark that. Go to that all the time because me and Tom Westerholm, we're out there. We're crushing a lot of content. I mean, we're putting a lot of stuff out there. Like there was most outlets have one media day story, two. We each wrote four. So there are eight media day pieces. There's just a lot of Celtics content. And hopefully you click through and you like all of them. Maybe you don't. Maybe you don't read all of them. But there are a lot of options and a lot of things for you to read. We've got a lot of angles covered. So please check out masslive.com/Celtics. Break time now. Coming back, your voicemails. It's the Locked On Celtics voicemail line, 617-221-6010. Leave a question, leave a comment, make it brief, make it fun. Here we go.
Hey, John, this is Andrew from Belmont. I was curious what your thoughts were. I know with Horford being gone, obviously there's been a lot of discussion about how we're going to get murdered on matchups with Embiid and also Giannis, but also just the vacuum that he'll leave in terms of quarterbacking the defense from the front court. And I'm assuming some of that responsibility will fall on Smarf, but he's in the back court. I think, how do you think that will play out? Do you think someone will step into that role in the front court, or is it just going to be a huge liability for us? I just wonder what your thoughts were on really lacking leadership on the defensive end now. And also, what's the deal with the Rain and Junk hashtag? Did GM trademark that, or are we still going to use that during the games? It's a fun part of the podcast.
Andrew from Belmont, thank you for leaving the voicemail. I got to tell you, that damn Rain and Junk hashtag is the number one question I've gotten since Jam and Jay left the podcast. I believe, first of all, the Rain and Jays are done for now. I'd say for now, because you never know. So no Rain and Jays hashtag, really. No Rain and Junk either. And that's Jam's purview. That's his thing. I feel like I've got a good sense of humor. I am in general, I think, when I'm out in public and I meet people and I'm funny in conversations. I can be funny, but I'm not a goofball like Sam is. Like, my personality, my sense of humor, I can hold my own, but like, I'm not seeing things like he's seeing things, and I'm not going for the joke most of the time. So I know Rain and Junk was a big part of this podcast. I got to figure out a way to kind of figure out how to make that another part of this podcast. Maybe that's what this voicemail thing is. Maybe the junk is, and we call it something else, is part of this voicemail line. I don't know. But I'll figure that out somehow, I hope. So hopefully that answers everybody's question. The good question that you asked as well was the quarterbacking, the defense. That's going to be a big problem, because that's the responsibility of the center, who is back behind everything. He sees everything. And Marcus Smart can call things out, but Marcus Smart's defending on the perimeter, and he's looking at one player, and behind that player is an empty half court. Whereas the center has he's defending a person in front of him or to his side or whatever, but in front of that center is everybody. So he's the guy that knows where the pick is coming from. He's the guy that understands that certain things are happening on the floor. So he, the center, has to see it all and call out whatever needs to happen. That is going to be very difficult. I don't know how well any of these guys are going to be able to do that, but I do know that none of them are going to be able to come close to what Al Horford was able to do. That's just one of his things that he does. He's just good at it. So I don't know who's going to step up in that role. That's just going to have to be something that the team figures out, and that falls on everybody to communicate even more. So guys in the wings, guys in the back, the whomever is playing center, whomever is playing power forward, they have to be responsible for more of their own areas and call things out and talk to each other. It just really increases the necessity for everybody to communicate better, because you just cannot rely on one guy to kind of bail you out. Up next, Tony from Connecticut.
Hi, my name is Tony from Connecticut. I'm a mail carrier, and I listen to your podcast every day. I'm really going to miss Sam Jam Packard and the other guys, but I feel like you're going to do well with what you're doing. There's a couple of things I was wondering maybe you could do. I would love to hear a crossover with the Locked On Patriots, just to talk about a little bit Boston sports together. I would love to hear your comments on a trade for Andre Drummond, which I think would definitely help the center position. And I would love to hear if you had a segment every week with an update about the Red Claws, with like their scoring, you know, some of their updates. I would love to hear the segment.
Tony, I love the ideas there of a crossover with the Patriots podcast. I think that's something that maybe we can do. We'll find a time for that. It might be a nice kind of when something isn't going on that we can find a little downtime. Maybe there's something we can kind of figure out there. I like that idea. Also, updates on the Red Claws, I think, will be very interesting, especially this year, because so many of these guys, these rookies, will end up there, especially if Taco ends up there, Tremont Waters. There's going to be a lot of interest in the Red Claws. So I think working in some sort of regular thing there is a good idea. And thank you for that. I'll definitely take that into consideration for sure. Andre Drummond, I'm not a fan. And Andre Drummond, getting him, trading for him would be very difficult because of the salaries. And I don't know that we want to have Boston matching a salary like Drummond's. I know he's a free agent. He's going to opt out and he's making what, 25 this year, 27. To match that salary, I mean, that's going to be difficult. Are you giving up Gordon Hayward? Are you certainly not going to give up a combination of Smart and somebody else? You can maybe piece together a few of the centers, but you got to think about what Detroit wants. Detroit is, I don't know what Detroit is, to be honest with you. They might sit there and say, we want to get something for nothing, but what do you want in exchange for Andre Drummond? What are you giving up in exchange for Andre Drummond? I don't know that there's any trade that's palatable to me. Trading Jaylen for Drummond. I know Drummond is a high-level rebounder and can put a lot of pressure on a defense, but I just don't think you pay that much for a center in today's NBA. You can get similar production, close to that production, for a lot less than what you're going to end up paying Andre Drummond. And you also have to consider that. Are they going to sign him in the offseason? Are they going to re-sign him? I don't know. He really wants that payday, a long-term contract. I don't feel comfortable giving him that kind of money. So I will just say no to Andre Drummond. Okay, a couple of questions about Jaylen. Let's start with this one.
What's going on, John? I just want to ask you. It's Nick, by the way. But I just want to ask you about Jaylen Brown. The report came out today that there was a slim chance that he was going to be sign a contract extension, and that would make him a restricted free agent. And I was just wondering do you think that the Celtics are going to offer him, not by the deadline in October, but also by the time the season ends. So I just want to hear what your thought on that is, and you know, would it be beneficial if the Celtics either match him or just offer him a new contract right now?
Talked about Jaylen Brown a little bit here. I think the way this is going to go is they're going to let this season play out. And as much as I talked about how pivotal a season this is for Jason Tatum, this is a big season for Jaylen Brown. And I think you get into free agency, you see what kind of season he's had, and then you deal with it. And is he going to get a max offer from somebody? It maybe not. Even if he has to have like a monster season. A couple of things to consider is there aren't a lot of teams with money. There is a possibility that he could get a big contract, or there's a possibility that the market just won't be there for any of these guys because teams want to spend their money on the next year's class. And you got Giannis Antetokounmpo out there just hanging out there in a couple of years. I mean, that entire year's class, that summer of 2021, there's going to be a lot of potential player movement. I mean, that could rival this past summer. So I don't know that teams are going to want to spend a ton of money on Jaylen Brown. Maybe they will. It's such an interesting, fascinating thing that's going to happen with him all year long. I mean, he said the right things in media day, but who knows if he's bullshitting or not? I don't know. It's going to be hard for him not to be impacted by the pursuit of a monster paycheck, it's going to be hard to see if he can put that out of his mind. And if he's having a great year, how that impacts him. Is he going to want to do more? Is he? I don't know. I really don't know. So you let the season play out. You get to free agency, and whether they match his contract or not, it depends on the season that he's had. It depends on what kind of offers might be out there. The Celtics will just put their ear to the ground and they'll kind of figure out what the buzz is. You know, for all this talk about tampering and everything, there are some surprises that come along, but they'll have an idea of what teams are willing to offer him. And so they'll know what their options are. I feel like if things are reasonable, then he'll make a fair amount of money, and there's a good chance he could stay. But I really don't know how it plays out until we see him play this year. All right, next, it's an interesting one about Jaylen and Jason Tatum.
Hey, John. This is Mitchell from Barrie, Ontario. I just want to talk about Jaylen Brown for a little second. There's been a lot of talk about whether the Celtics are going to, you know, extend him. Are they going to start him? And both of the answers to those questions are probably not. And then you look at a guy like Jason Tatum, and the answer to those questions are, yeah, probably. And I'm just wondering, you know, what's Jaylen Brown thinking through all this? Because here's a guy who has, I think, even played better than Jason Tatum through the majority of his career, other than a couple months. And he's got to be looking over and thinking, well, Jason Tatum's starting. You know, he's getting his max probably. You know, is there a little bit of a damaged relationship that could be, you know, happening that could spread throughout the next couple of years? Anyways, just want to know your thoughts. Thanks.
And this gets into the whole jealousy thing, right? Like, I don't know. I mean, they seem to get along fine. I think there's always a risk of that. I mean, some level of that happened with Gordon Hayward last year because he was getting minutes and it was pretty clear that some guys weren't appreciative that he was getting minutes. But this is a bit different from that at the same time. I don't know how that impacts him. And I know for a fact that he's sure not going to tell any of us if it does. Like, he's definitely not going to share that. Not unless he pulls a Terry Rozier and he signs somewhere else and decides to go on ESPN and air the dirty laundry. But I don't know. And it's interesting, but I think they both understand that also this is part of it. And just as long as they're not holding it over each other, then I don't think it will impact them. But, you know, these guys are young and social media is different. And it's hard for me to put myself in their shoes because I really don't see the world through a 23-year-old's eyes in today's world, 2019. It's hard for me to kind of really guess how each guy is thinking, but I can see it. I can see why this question is asked. I can see how it's possible. I mean, you got one guy out there, both guys having kind of similar years, but still here I am talking about Jason Tatum having this pivotal role and saying flat out that Jaylen Brown, I think, is a step below. Look, this could end up on Old Takes Exposed, and it could be Jaylen Brown that's having a superstar year and Jason Tatum that's going to be the step below. I acknowledge that that's possible. So if there's any feeling of animosity or anything like that, I would just hope that Jaylen is able to kind of channel that into something positive, and hopefully that manifests itself in a good season. Interestingly enough, here's a question or comment that plays along with that.
John, what's up? It's Alex and Revere, longtime listener to the show. Just a real quick thing, just about basketball psychology that I think is really interesting. You know, I coach youth and younger teenagers in basketball, and when I hear you talk about the Celtics and like Terry Rozier, you know, looking for his numbers and guys, you know, looking to shine, it's funny how it's the same thing with basketball players at the younger level, right? Like, no matter how much the team wants to win, people kind of always venture off and look for the individual shine. I just think it's interesting of, like, no matter what level of basketball, it's that's always there. Like, when I hear you talk about the Celtics, sometimes it's how I talk about my kids that I coach. just think it's kind of interesting and kind of a nerdy comment that I wanted to make. But I love the show. Keep up the great work. And I look forward to hearing the next episodes.
It's hard for people to be truly selfless, right? I mean, we do nice things and we do team things at work, but you also want some of the credit, don't you? Right? I mean, I get voicemails from people that are complimenting me and saying very nice things. And I like it. I like hearing that. I don't like it when people don't say nice things. You know, I don't like it when people say bad things about me. That's kind of, I think, a general feeling of how people react. And it's not different in sports. I think it's important to understand that just because a guy makes $20 million doesn't make him any less human. Just makes him rich and human. And we like to say, fans in general really love to say things like, oh, well, you're making this all this money. So does that change your brain chemistry? Does it change how you interact with people? I mean, maybe you're interacting with a different set of people. Maybe you're interacting with other rich people, but still, insecure people are insecure, and giving you $30 million doesn't make you any less insecure. You don't suddenly go from, oh God, I'm unsure of myself, to, oh, I'm rich, now I'm fully confident. It doesn't happen all the time. There are poor people who are fully confident too. The mentality of these guys is what it is, and the added kind of the business side, the pursuit of that money, really it makes things very interesting, because this is a team sport, yet it's all individual. Guys can get traded at any moment. They can get cut if they don't have guaranteed contracts. It's a very cutthroat business, and free agency comes around, and if you leave, suddenly you're a villain because you wanted a different situation or you wanted the money, and people expect you to give up money for some reason. Like, oh, well, you know, you've made enough money. You shouldn't be making as much money as you are. Okay, I get it, except they've earned that money. This is their deal. This is their cut from the CBA. Like, they don't owe anybody anything. This is their job. This is them working for themselves. So yeah, it really is a wild dynamic in the NBA, and the basketball is different in the NBA because of that dynamic. Guys want to do individual things, and different people from different backgrounds, different upbringings, different social influences, all of that stuff, all of that matters. And how you pursue your business interests, how you react to things that are happening in the locker room, coaches' decisions and all that, it's different for a lot of different people. So I'm fascinated by that stuff. And it's not as simple as you're the player, you're rich, you should do everything that the fans want. It's just not that simple. So, I mean, I could talk about this stuff all day. And, you know, I just sprinkle it in from time to time. I love to kind of expose people to that kind of thinking, because that's how it is. And it's not the dynamic that you might hear on sports talk radio. It's not the coach says this, you do this, end of story. That's not how it works in the NBA. And even if you think that's how it should work, tough. It's not how it works. Okay. The business side of this has a tremendous impact, because there's so much money involved that it can't help but have a tremendous impact. That's why I can criticize Terry Rozier, but at the same time, I understand it. So like, I understand it comes out as like maybe talking out of both sides of my mouth, but I understand why, but I think he should have done things a different way. That's it. I think he should have. Even with those same interests, he would have been more, well, I'm saying this understanding that he's getting paid about $20 million a year, but I still feel like it would have been better off for him if he had just calmed down about certain things. Like, things would have worked out better for him. Whatever. They worked out fine. He's in Charlotte. He's getting paid. He's not worried about anything. So, but the mentality is what it is. All right. One last one, going long on this podcast, but whatever. It's preseason for me too, I guess. So one last one. Here we go.
Hey, John, a long-time listener here. Sad to see Sam Jan and the King leave, but now we get twice the show, so we got to look at it on the positive side. But I got a fun question for you. So I'm an avid player of NBA 2K. My player got drafted by the Boston Celtics, and halfway through the year, right around the All-Star break, Marcus Smart is leading the NBA in three-point percentage at 59.7%. And I love it. Is this a sign of things to come, or is this simply video game madness?
Well, if I've learned anything from 2K, whether it was playing it, which I don't play anymore, but whether it's that or seeing on social media, I think everything that happens in 2K is a perfect avatar for the upcoming season. So get ready for Marcus Smart, 59% free throw shooter. I mean, three-point shooter. Like, 59% from three? That's... lock it in. It's done. No video game madness. Lock it in. Also, lock in a 5-star rating for this podcast. I hope you do, because I'm working hard at it and trying to make it a good show as we figure out how the show will grow. If you're a new listener, please give me a subscription. Go ahead and subscribe wherever podcasts exist. And all of you regular listeners, share the podcast. Spread the word. Tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.